This is the Ballad of Brienne. This
oh
Monday.
My God! Yes,
she's
that
crying
is
in
Brienne's
her warm
song.
Volcanic
crying
bathtub.
In a bathtub.
I think Brienne would like Britney Spears.
Yeah, I think she would.
She'd probably
maybe
be more
like
of a Spice
Game
Girl.
Game of Thrones podcast.
Actually,
Spice Girls listen to this.
Please, God, do not let me be the first Lannister to die in a bathtub.
We only pray to the Lord of Light on this show, Eric.
Oh, okay. Lord of Light. Lord of Light, give me wisdom, because the night is dark and full of terrors.
It is.
We are presented by winnerscoming.net, as most of you know who listen to this podcast. And today we're being presented by Phil's Presence, who has joined us yet again for a Monday episode.
Yay.
Yes. Mondays. They're awesome.
This is the first episode that we've watched that you haven't had ahead of time, right?
Yeah, it was the first one I watched on a Sunday night at 9 o'clock with everyone else. It felt, it felt
poor
good.
Poor you, Phil.
No,
we feel so
equal.
Bad.
Let me the way we like have to way. Watch it, Selena and I have the most buku jank, like gangster method to watch it. I feel like we're dealing drugs when we watch it. And we had to deal with lags for the last 10 minutes.
Yes.
And Phil comes in, he's like, oh. I had to watch it on
I had to watch
time.
It on TV. Like,
on TV,
oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't know. Flab. HBO Go kind of takes their little time putting it up. You know, the first 10 minutes or so, it wasn't even up.
We had it at 5:04, or excuse me, what the hell? We had it at 8:04 Central, I think.
Yeah, I had it at like 7 or 8 past, but it was only showing up on my computer and not my phone. And then my computer cut out and I had to pick it up on my phone. It was unbelievable.
You had to watch
Our
it on
lives
your
are
phone.
Hard.
Don't you have HBO?
Technology.
Yeah, yeah. Well, somebody else was on the TV, so I had to use HBO Go. But yeah. No,
does
it worked.
Does he not understand the importance of what you do?
Yeah, seriously. Right.
You know, like,
I have to podcast later. Come on.
Later, okay?
It's the same time slot as Mad Men. I feel like people out there that
Speaking of, I need to watch that.
I feel like the big wigs have planned this, okay? It's a battle.
So do you get the
me.
TV next week?
Well, he's moving out. So I'm getting a new
service.
I'm getting a new service provider. I'm getting a new service provider and a new HBO Go login, unless I can still use his. That'd be cool.
You should, just because he makes you watch it now.
You it's bastard. True. Eric's roommates don't know he's a nerd. They don't know he does anything. Eric just like ties a turtleneck sweater around his neck and walks out of the bedroom, and he just hides all of his Harry Potter stuff.
He's an undercover nerd.
It's true.
You are.
Undercover nerd. That's cool. That's a cool title. That's got to be like my autobiography will be called that if it's not already taken. I had other titles for my autobiography at one point, but
well, we can't
Twitter
wait
profile.
To hear those.
I'll come
sure
up with
the
a
listeners.
Little
about
your titles.
Well, it's Monday. We all know what today is. If you've been following along with us, this is the fifth episode we're doing as a recap this season.
We're halfway done.
We're halfway through. Does this sound? I was worried about saying that too. Like, oh my God, season 3 is halfway over. But this episode had like almost too many scenes. It was like, oh my God. And they all kind of moved at the right pace. There was so much to this episode.
I loved this episode. I think, you know, we were talking about this before we started recording. This is a Brian Cogman episode. And it flowed really well. Like, I've really enjoyed the season so far. But watching this, I mean, this just, you never got bored. There wasn't a single scene that you didn't want to watch.
There's a lot of bathing.
There was a lot of bathing.
That's
there
true. There were lots
That's
of butts.
That's what we were texting.
We were doing, yes, we were doing a butt count.
Selena's going to rank them later in the episode.
Look forward to that.
I think I know who wins this one. No, it was funny. All of it was good. We got to see the cave scene that all you book readers have been talking about and holding over our heads.
Which one? There are two cave scenes.
Damn it. You see, everybody just has... You just take it from here,
guys. What
was
the other cave scene? What was the other cave scene besides
you know the one, the one with the ship? Oh, wait. That was also both. Yes. Lots of little moments that fans have been waiting for.
Yes.
Yeah.
There was some fighting in the cave and some not fighting.
Yep.
Some loving.
You know, I'm surprised the cave people weren't like peeping on them. Like they didn't have a scene where they walked in and they, like, what are you doing in our hot spring? And they'd be like, what are you doing? And
they
be like, we live here
in the cave.
We live here. We're the cave people. What are you doing?
Gollum. You know?
Oh, those people.
We're busy. We're busy knowing nothing, Jon Snow.
It was good. I didn't expect to see that. I know I saw someone write on one of the comment threads. They were like, we're ready for Rose Leslie nudity. We are ready for it. And I'm thinking, well, there you are. There's your episode.
Yep. Well, you guys, I mean, for Micah and Phil, because this is sort of one of the moments, I think, in the book that, I mean, it really turns John around. And I think it fans have been looking forward to it a lot. Do you think that the series did a good job leading up to it? Because I sort of felt, I mean, okay, it, you know, it's just a scene like any other scene. I'm not saying, oh my gosh, let's put this on a pedestal more than certain other scenes coming in season three. But I sort of felt like because it was placed so early in the episode, it was almost like they got it out of the way, which I wonder, I mean, I thought it was fine, but I wonder how some fans might feel about that.
It was very quick.
That's what I thought.
The pace of the episode was very fast, I think, in general, and you were going from one scene to another very, very quickly, one storyline to another very quickly. There was no buildup to it, if that's what you're asking. I don't think there was as much as there was in the book. They didn't really tease it much throughout the course of the season. Mm-hmm. It just kind of happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I feel like that a lot of like their flirting happened in season two. So I kind of wonder how much, you know, people even remember of that.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. And again, I mean, it's, you know, it's they, compared to some of the other stuff that happened in this episode, this was not anywhere close to the most important or even most noteworthy scene. But I just feel like they're such a big part of the fandom who are so into the John and Ygritte pairing. And I'd be really curious to see how they felt about the way that this was dealt with. Because I think sometimes we build it up in our heads a lot. Like we have these big scenes that we know are coming, and it must be tough because in a way there's no way that the creators can live up to everybody's expectations.
Well, I was definitely expecting an episode that was set mostly north of the wall. To be perfectly, I know these things are always like mixed bags with scenes, but considering what happened north of the wall last episode, I was really expecting a, kind of a huge north of the wall episode. Instead, we got this, which really, you know, only a little bit north of the wall with Jon Snow, but he still had moments of character development. Obviously, that pairing happened, but he walked up to that guy who wargs, and he's like, what happens to your eagle when I kill you? You know, he's getting in his face, and he's trying to prove himself, and he tells that other guy, you know, he has to basically sell out his fellow crows. But this, I thought it was really important. I thought it was handled well. And for once, I'm behind Kit Harington on the show. I'm like, that guy, you know, is doing a good job.
It's because he got
laid.
I don't like people that just get laid. The Onion Knight hasn't been laid yet. And I don't want to see the Onion Knight get laid, given the pairing that he's got in this episode.
It's all backstory. You don't need to see that. How about, I don't know if you guys saw this watching on HBO Go, but they threw back a little bit in the lead up to this episode, the last time on Game of Thrones, they actually showed Ned and Robert.
Oh, did they? Oh, that's nice. I missed that.
It's probably because there was so much talk. I mean, I'm thinking particularly in the steamy bath scene with Jamie Brienne of there. I mean, obviously he painted the context more of what actually happened in King's Landing the night that the Mad King fell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was brilliant.
But the talk was more related to Daenerys and how Robert was going to kill her. So I wondered if that was tying into the scene that we saw between Barristan and Jorah when they were kind of going back and forth with each other.
Can I just say, by the way, when they cut from that, whenever Jamie finished his story and they cut, he was like, oh, yes, this was blah, 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 the rebellion. And then we see like the people riding and I'm like, is this a flashback? Is it happening right now? But it wasn't.
I thought that too at a different moment when the little girl comes
to the Onion Knight's cell. Oh, no, I think that's what I was thinking about.
Yeah. And it goes straight to them doing the guy talk at first because it's like shot over the horizon. She's like,
yes,
this was when Aegon used to run this, Ser Davos, Aegon. And it's like, oh my gosh, like sweeping wide shot. I'm like, and they're doing a flashback.
You saw the dots and you're like, it's story time.
And I was like, no.
Oh,
wait,
totally
we know these people, forget about it, you know. Yeah. And then Danny rides up with her little blue bonnet on, and I'm like, oh man, this isn't a flashback at all.
Not as exciting as you had hoped. But I really did like that scene between Jorah and Barristan. I don't think, because it happens differently in the books where Barristan doesn't reveal himself until later, and I don't think that there's much like interaction there where they're able to like talk to each other knowing like who they are. So it was nice to have like a moment where Jorah and Barristan are like sharing like, you know, stories of the past, and there was a lot of like history, I guess, talked about in this episode. It was very much backstory kind of given or expanded on.
In the show, does Daenerys know about Jorah's past selling that slave?
Yeah, he told her about what happened in the first season.
Yeah, I thought so.
This is before she started freeing slaves, though.
Yeah, yeah. No, I was just thinking because it's an interesting juxtaposition that in this episode where we're seeing her sort of deal with all these slaves she's just freed, Jorah's like, oh, by the way, everybody, I was a slave owner.
Now, did he really do that? I mean, I guess this may be a silly question, but did he really do that? Or was that just sort of a cover story to get him to be banished that he would then be a double agent?
He really did that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. He did that. And I think it was really great because in this episode, when he's having the conversation with Ser Barristan, obviously he seemed a little nervous. And in my mind, this was because Ser Barristan is a man with lots of respect. If they were back sort of in their home area, their home world, he would be almost sort of a celebrity, kind of, I mean, in the right circles, because he's so well known and he's brave and he's done all these things and he's lived so long and yada yada yada. So I thought that was kind of cute, because I was like, oh well, here we go, we're gonna see some broship form. and then he's talking about the slavery bit, and I think that was the first time we've actually seen in the show that Jorah showed any kind of remorse for what he had done. He seemed in that moment, I mean, I don't know if it was good acting on his part in the show or if it was great acting in real life. I don't know how many layers it's supposed to have, but it seemed like he had really started feeling terrible about what he did, selling people off. And I don't know if that's because of his time with Dany, but it seemed real.
Well, in the books, he didn't sell him off because he was like, oh, yay, I'm going to sell slaves now. I mean, he did it to keep his wife. Basically, he married this woman he really loved, and it's the Cliff's Notes now, and he didn't have any money. And so to keep this wife happy, he caught this person. I don't remember what this person had done, but he'd done something wrong, and he decided to sell him to get some money to keep his wife happy. So, yeah. I mean, it's not a totally good thing, but at least it's kind of like in that scene with Jamie, where like we peel back the layers, no pun intended, of the Onion Knight, of that wasn't him. But, you know, we peel back the layers and we learn that there's always reasons for people doing what they're doing, that there's no way to judge people just based on their actions alone in this series.
Unless you're Joffrey.
Or Ned. I mean,
in a position where you can judge people for things they've done and not who they are.
Yeah.
I thought the key to that conversation between Barristan and Jorah came when Jorah said, oh, so you don't sit on the small council.
Yeah.
Because that would have revealed some information about Jorah had Barristan sat on the small council.
That's true.
Right.
I thought that was interesting. I didn't know that perspective yet. And then he was like, basically, because Robert didn't really like me at first. And so it just kind of stayed that way.
Killed a bunch of his friends. You know, it's tough.
Dozens. He said dozens. That's a lot of friends to kill.
I know.
Oh, man.
I mean, come
honestly,
on.
Honestly, I was always kind of surprised by the fact that they chose to keep Ser Barristan on. I guess, you know, when you've won a war, you have to make some of your enemies your friends. But at the same time, it's always tough with these people. Like, both Jaime and Ser Barristan, like, they just sort of flip on a dime. And Jaime's considered this great betrayer, and Barristan's considered this great man of honor. It's just interesting.
Did any of you guys actually, I mean, I'm speaking to the knowledge you had before you either read it in the book or in Eric, in my case, saw it in the show, but did you hold any ill will toward Jaime for betraying his oath and murdering the Mad King?
Well, before or after this point?
Before.
Yeah, I think that's a good question. That's a solid question. I don't think so. Yeah. No. The reason that, because it's like clearly after this scene, you care for Jaime a lot. He's just misunderstood. but still, right.
No.
The real injustice that he portrayed in this episode, it's unmatched. And that was either done in one long take or several shorter, but still long takes. I thought he did a great job. Before this, yeah, I thought he was just kind of an asshat who happened to be, you know, enjoying, like, that's because all we have to go by.
Hold on, can we think of what an asshat would look like real quick? Just a
picture. Already have the ass, so.
The ass
right.
Hat
now
is.
Imagine a hat on it, all right? Please, no one send that as a
hello,
post
shot. Hello, Brienne.
I just want you to address asshat.
What,
really
He's sitting on the Iron Throne when Ned comes in and has to pull him off and, like, jerk, do your, like, seriously, man, get off the throne. You know, that's the real kind of angle, the lens I've seen him through in the past. So, yeah, I mean, I don't really particularly hold against him what he did to Bran. I know that sounds terrible. He makes him a bad person. But in terms of, like, what I think of if it's, like, cool, if I can get behind his motives, I couldn't before because he just seemed like he was all in it for the power and untouchable. This new vulnerable side of him is very appealing.
And that's very interesting to hear, because I think, you know, that's how it's good to hear that the show is doing that to the same level that the books are, because that's pretty much what you go through with Jamie. Like, you go through the first two, three books going, this guy is such a jerk. Like, what is happening? Why doesn't he just die already? And then, there, you know, there comes a point where you start seeing the story through his point of view and you learn all of these things. And you just totally have to reassess what you think of him. And I think that's one of the reasons why he's one of people's most favorite character, is because you just do this 180 with him and you see everything in a new light. It's like an episode of Lost, this guy. It's like you see one thing, it forces you to reevaluate everything you thought you knew.
It's like Sirius Black, you know, right? You think he's bad, yeah, he's good.
Kind of.
About his story, can we talk about the Mad King here basically hiding Wildfire, or stashing it beneath Fleabottom and Stables and Taverns and the Red Keep and the Sept of Baelor, basically stashing Wildfire everywhere because he's crazy.
Yeah.
I think it's smart. I mean, for what he wanted to do, he wanted to burn the city down if he was going to be burnt down.
Yeah. It makes total sense.
Yeah, good plan.
Nothing nobody else would
well
have done.
Dude.
Yeah. But my problem is Jamie in his story said he first killed the pyromancer. So you think they've recovered safely all the places that they hid the Wildfire, or are they just sitting on a powder keg down in King's Landing?
Well, I'm sure they cleaned it up.
There were more pyromancers to, I guess, clean it up.
Didn't we see some in season two?
Yeah, they had a whole bunch.
Yeah, I think Tyrion filled the boat with most of what was left.
Okay.
Yeah, and the waters and
blew up.
I just can't help but think that, like, under the orphanage, there's a hidden stash that's, like, threatening to detonate
well
at any
be.
Moment. Like a small, like, ant or something comes and...
Yeah.
A fire ant. There you go.
A fire ant. Yeah.
I really wish that Pyromancer was a class on Warcraft now that I think about it, Phil.
That would be awesome.
Well, how tight would that be?
Yeah, you get a flaming sword. You have, like, this, like, you know, jars of wildfire you, like, throw at people, and then
shoot fire from your
damage
hands.
Over time effects.
There you go, dots.
This sounds awesome.
That's what I'm saying. We need a Pyromancer class. Anyway, maybe we'll throw that in the Game of Thrones video game that we're going to have on the show on Friday.
Speaking of flaming swords.
Oh, yeah, speaking of flaming swords. Here, I'll make this transition for you, Eric. You ready?
Yeah.
Using Eric's advice, I would like to if you guys would allow me, if this is okay, I would like to transition into speaking about Thoros of Myr and everything that happened with him. Is that
you know
cool?
The lightsaber battle? Yeah. That was pretty awesome. What would happen if only one person had a lightsaber and the other one just had a normal sword? This is what would happen.
Yeah, or you'd burn your hand on the fire on the hilt.
It's got to be hot. And, you know, it's got to be easy to act in a scene like that. Because the Hound, when he was first dodging those first attacks, was, like, looking at the fire, like, really intently. And I'm like, he's actually scared. This guy's actually coming at him with a flaming sword.
Yes.
I was like, that has to be the easiest scene to act in the entire show. Because he's just like, whoa, and, you know, getting out of the way. But rightly so. I mean, that is terrifying.
The Hound can't catch a break.
He did, though. He did win.
He did. He caught a break.
The
flaming sword.
He had to fight somebody who had a flaming sword. I mean, that's his worst possible nightmare next to what happened at Blackwater.
Very true.
You know, they can bring that guy back to life how many times, but they can't give him his eye back.
Yeah, I take
Isn't
life
that interesting?
Over eye.
What do you guys think about this new concept that they're introducing where they can bring someone back to life, not just as like a white right?
Yes, you did it.
Yes.
That was it.
Great.
Nice work.
You know, that they can actually bring someone back like Beric. Like, even though he made a comment, he says every time I'm brought back, there's a little less. I mean, Thoros of Myr, we've seen this happen. This isn't just some conjecture of like, oh, the god of blah 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 can do this.
I think
like Thoros of
Myr.
It's
laying the groundwork. And when I say that, I mean because if you look back to what happened with Melisandre, that was kind of the groundwork for Thoros of Myr and Beric Dondarrion in this whole scenario. And I feel like this may be laying the groundwork for other things in the series.
Right. But I mean, for the people that haven't read the books, I mean, what did you guys think of this development?
It worries me.
Okay.
I like him as a character. I think he's cool. The Red Priest thing and them all supporting the Lord of Light thing. I'm not that religiously aligned in this show. I don't really care if you pray to the Seven, if you pray to the old gods that have trees, faces. I don't care if you pray to fire flames. I understand that they keep you warm and they're pretty cool to look at when you've had a lot of mead. I get it. Totally get it. But I think it's cool. I mean, I think the point that you were making was this wasn't an idealized, oh, he's back to life. This was someone crouched over him, and how raw the show is filmed. I mean, it's very raw. It feels a lot like, I mean, it's live action, but you don't see fantasy in this light of live action. Like, watch something like The Hobbit. It's all very, it's everything is grand. But in this, it's very raw. It's also because it has a budget that is not as large as those kinds of things. But it's also because that's how they wanted it to feel, because that's how the book is. So seeing someone lean over someone who has just had his shoulder cleaved, think about those things you have there, your collarbone, you have veins, all right?
Your lungs, it's crazy. Your heart. Yeah.
Yeah, there's lots of things right there to cut through in order to get to where his sword was. But he leaned over him, said a few shalalas, all right? And then boom, he stood right back up.
Shalala.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
Hey, it's huge.
Da-da-da.
And it was a big deal.
So quick, too, in this particular episode, I thought maybe they would kind of come back to that at the end of the episode, because it's such a huge reveal that Beric Dondarrion can come back to life.
Well, and I didn't agree with their initial cutaway, but then they did come back to that scene where he and Arya have that really heartfelt conversation, I felt.
Yeah, she longs for her father, and I thought that was really a cool moment.
Speaking of heartfelt conversations with Arya, her exchange with Gendry, did anyone else get a little, was the room a little dusty then, or was that just me?
Dusty or musty?
That was me also.
Yeah.
I love that. I do. This is an interesting, a very interesting development, because, I mean, as book fans know, this happens very, very differently in the book. And they go to Aegon Horl and they have a whole thing that's actually, I think, a lot of people's favorite scene, especially because, again, this is another relationship that people have sort of really gotten behind. And I want to just emphasize that there's only 4 years apart in the book, so it's different than in the show. But obviously they've chosen to change that up for the show. And I think, but I still think at the same time, I mean, I really enjoy the Gendry-Arya dynamic, romantic or not. That's not really the point. It's just that it's nice to see in these books that two people actually have each other's backs. It's kind of similar to Jamie and Brienne. It's just such a relief to see that, like, some people can actually trust each other, you know, because it's so full of backstabbing. So if they really do split up at this point, I'll be really sad, but I did love the scene.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you bring up sort of the relationship dynamic, because I always saw Gendry sort of as replacing Jon Snow in a way for Arya. Mm-hmm.
I think that's true.
Yeah,
I think in a lot of ways.
I thought they were
going to
kiss.
No.
Did you really?
I mean, I did, because I know in the books it's not that much of a gap, and I didn't know what they were trying, you know, I don't know the message they're trying to send with it. This is my first time watching it, but I thought it was a great moment, and when he said that, I didn't expect him to say that, so it was gut-wrenching, as much as a TV show can be. Mm. I mean, as much as we like these characters, it was really cool to see. He's like, well, you would be my lady. And I was like, damn, Gendry, throwing down that gauntlet now. Shit.
I do think he did. I'm not sure he meant that by that line, though, because I know a lot of people have been like, I'm just checking Tumblr right now just for fun, and everyone's like, you'd be my lady, I'm crying, and all these kinds of gifts. And I'm like, well, I think that the you'd be, and you guys can disagree with me, but I thought that the you'd be my lady line was less about I love you and I would, you would be my lady, as opposed to it, you would be a noble, you wouldn't be my friend, you wouldn't be my family, because I would be common born and you would be noble and I would serve you like I've served people my whole life. That's the way that I read it.
Yeah, that's the way I read it too.
I think so. Mm-hmm. I think it was meant that way. I think also the line that preceded it was also meant to kind of throw us up in the air about it, because she said, I could be your family.
Yeah.
And that's a very intimate, I could be your family. So to follow it up with, you'd be my lady, I can understand how we could twist it.
I definitely, I agree. I don't fault the people that are reading more into it than that. I think that's totally legitimate.
Well, that's interesting. Well, that's a new spin, because I thought he meant, you know, we could be together, because they have spent a lot of time together. They've been through a lot of stuff, and Arya's cool, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, he doesn't really want to serve anybody, though. Isn't that what this is about, that he's separating from her? Because that's interesting, too. We have these people who are no longer bound by duty, almost, you know, to serve. Jorah and Barriss and Selmy talk about wanting to finally serve someone they enjoy and can get behind. And Gendry's the same. He's like, I'm not serving people. I've been serving people all my life. These are brothers here. you know, my family. So it's really interesting to see these people kind of want something better for themselves than just what the duty, you know, life of duty has provided so far.
Yeah. But it'll be interesting to see where his story goes now, Gendry, because obviously he's not out of the story. And I'm really curious because I have no idea, honestly, where they're going to take his character.
Not to harken back to Selena's favorite area or locale, but I think in a way it's another crossroads. You know, you can tell that
Arya
and Gendry may just for the time being be going in different directions.
Mm. Those playing the Game of Owns drinking game, we've mentioned crossroads again. That means lift your glass.
When you said favorite area, I thought you were going to start talking about Jamie's ass for a second. I was like, oh, are we going there?
Going back to her favorite area. Let's go back to Jamie's ass. Let's go back to Jamie's ass.
It's the director's favorite area, okay?
Why is that?
Because there were like five asses in this episode.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this was an ass-heavy episode.
It really was.
Excuse me, may I ask you a few questions? Sorry.
Guys, the Twitter sphere has been complaining about the lack of nudity recently. Mm-hmm. They're like, well, ass is the cheapest nudity we can get, all right? We pay the actors a lot less for ass. And they're like, all right, well, fill it up.
How about not getting ass? We can turn over to Stannis. And talk about him for a minute.
Oh my gosh.
And his creepy wife.
Yeah, I want to hear what you guys thought of Selyse.
Well, clearly she is a Westerosian geneticist because she keeps her dead fetuses.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Formaldehyde wildfire. That
creeped me out. Oh my God. That was the moment. Creepy. It was so disgusting.
She just went down the line and named them at one point, too.
Yes.
Which was even creepier.
Well, how many guys do you know, how many wives out there can you admit to cheating on them? And they reply, no act done in the service of the Lord of Light can ever be a sin.
I wept joyously.
I wept joyously when she told me. Oh, man.
He was like, okay.
He was disappointed. Well, he was disappointed. He was like, I think he wanted some shit for it. He came to confess his sins, and she's like, that's fine.
Yeah, but she's sitting in a room with babies and bottles.
she's like a cat sister, kind of, you know?
Well, yeah, I drew that comparison, too. But what must that be for the daughter? You know, it's like,
oh my God,
hey, daughter, come eat dinner, you know? And she's like eating dinner with her unborn siblings, like, in the background. Whoa. It's like...
In mason jars.
Mason jars, yeah. Like, can you pass the salt? Oh, wait, that's your brother. Sorry. Yeah.
Oh, gross. But one thing Selyse did say that I did have a problem with, besides the fact that her name kind of sounds like mine, is that she said that Melisandre gave Stannis a son. And that confused me because is she talking about the shadow baby? Like, is the shadow baby a son? Like, does it have a gender?
Maybe
did she
to
say,
her it is.
It looked like a dude to me. In the episode.
Yeah, but what is it? Is it a round? Like, what? That's not a sun. Like, what's happening?
Where did it go?
Didn't she say it blew away? I mean, didn't it only exist to kill?
Yeah, it had one use in it, you know?
One time use sun?
Yeah. Use shadow baby.
Mistaken in the books. Aren't there two of these shadow creatures that appear in Clash of Kings? Not just one?
Yes. There are two.
Yeah, there are two. They send them different places.
All right, so maybe
twins.
For the show's purpose, they meant to relate back to the existing shadow person, and maybe that person is still alive. Like, maybe they were insinuating that it's still out there.
But it's not a person.
I think,
like,
she's
I
just
don't
crazy.
Understand.
I think she's just crazy. That's basically what it all boils down to.
You're just prejudiced against shadow people.
So, Eric, what do we call this type of person similar to Lysa Arryn?
Oh, crazier than a shithouse rat. Those of you playing the Game of Owns drinking game, we have said crazier than a shithouse rat. Pick up your glass. Yes.
Also, Eric, can we just address real quick what a shithouse would be?
What a shithouse would be?
What a rat would be hanging out in a shithouse.
I have no idea, sir. Maybe. Right, maybe on Friday's episode. I do want to ask, is this spoiler okay if I ask what happened to her daughter's face? Was it burned or is she half dragon?
It's a disease. She's not half dragon. No.
Okay, because I didn't
I was
know
wondering
she's
if they're,
which half?
They're going to explain that.
Yeah, they didn't address it.
That she's singing a song that says the birds have scales. And I was thinking of dragons. And I was like, well, that's interesting because she looks like she has scales. And that's not like any kind of negative comment. I just want to know what's up with
it's
her.
It's true. They didn't explain that at all.
No, she has a disease called grayscale. And I'm guessing that they'll address it in the show at some point.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just being in true Game of Thrones fashion. I mean, you got such deep insight, I thought, just by watching Stannis' character. You know, he has a strong sense of duty that he portrays immediately, you know, talking about how he forsaked his vows to his wife. But then you see, like, when he goes in to visit his daughter and she comes running up to him, she's so happy to see him, but he can't even bring himself to hug her,
yeah,
to reciprocate in any way. And I wonder, is that more of what he's gone through with Melisandre and sort of the fact that he's been drained emotionally? Maybe it's the battle. I don't know. But, you know, was there any point where Stannis was receptive to emotion in any way?
That's a good question. I don't think so, because Ser Davos is the one who had to make her a boat.
And that's also the big complaint that everyone has against him. I mean, his brother claimed the seat of the king. He claimed the crown ahead of his big brother. I mean, even though his big brother was alive and he knew he would be very pissed off about it. Like, he was that lame and heartless as a person that his brother chose the crown before him. So I think everyone kind of knows that he's kind of a weird dude.
Yeah. And I mean, I think Davos has been apologizing for Stannis's lack of, you know, what's the word?
Empathy.
I don't know. Empathy. Yeah. For the longest time by spending time with his daughter. You know, that's why they're such good friends, is because Stannis just wasn't around. And it's not like he was doing other things, you know, a long time ago before he tried to conquer King's Landing either. So I think that there is, you know, it's dad. He's a bad father, I think, and inattentive at times to her needs, especially when it comes to those little girl things.
Mm.
Call Westeros Child Services.
Take her away.
She's
I thought she was locked up.
Both of them seem to be.
Yeah, that's what it felt like to me.
I think Dragonstone's just kind of a miserable place.
Yeah.
It's like carved out of like a mountain or
stone.
Something. Yeah.
The little girl says that the Aegon built it though, right? Or the Targaryens built it?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Probably with dragons, I'm guessing.
With stones of dragons.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if they ever
kidney stones.
Explain exactly.
It
was interesting that they made Shireen's friend the Onion Knight, Ser Davos. I like that change.
That's a change.
She had a really weird, like, clown friend in the books.
What?
That just always really creeped me out. Yeah, she was, like, friends with this clown. And I just saw, you know, there's an episode of Supernatural, which I don't know. It's just randomly, but there's, like, kids running around holding hands with clowns that end up killing their parents. And it's always, like, that kind of thing that I imagined. Because it was so creepy.
Cheery.
Happy Monday, it's like it, everybody. Right? Yeah.
I thought fetuses in jars was the worst thing I was going to talk about tonight.
Hand-holding with clowns murdering their parents.
Yes.
You know, I could see something like that happening in Game of Thrones, though, if you think about it.
I don't see clowns, actually, though. They don't. Well, I guess they have makeup.
What's his name again? Jingle Bells?
Patchface.
Something like that.
No, Patchface. Jingle Bells is a different jester. Oh. He's the phrase. But Patchface is interesting because the song that Shireen was singing over the end credits is actually lines that Patchface said in the book. And he's always saying these rhyming lines, which seem like nonsense, but a lot of people think are like prophetic.
Such a nerd, Phil.
Yeah, thank you. So there's your nerd fact of the day. But yeah, if you rewatch the episode, listen closely to those lines, and you might be able to predict what's going to happen.
See, there is a reason you listen to the show, guys. You're not just bored. Micah, it won't come and hurt you, really. Those threats aren't not real.
No, they're...
But you learn stuff.
Well, maybe they are.
I think someone recently in a review, Micah, I took a glance at him this morning, and someone called you, I think they called you adorable or something like that, and then they said the threats are working. So someone is a fan of violence, I think.
Well, you know, I don't really threaten anymore. I just reference back to old threats provided by other people on the show. So
did you hear Cat's threat?
It's a safe tactic.
Exactly. It's once removed. It's threats once removed.
Exactly.
I think a little dangerous.
Well, how about, if I can bring this up, Bolton, because when we first arrive, you don't know what kind of guy Bolton's going to be in front of Jaime. And I thought, even though he kind of played with him a little bit, revealing what had happened at King's Landing, in the end, he told Jaime that his sister's still alive and then had him sent to go see the doctor. So I liked Bolton, actually. I thought he was pretty agreeable.
Yeah, that was nice to see.
Well, he was kind of a douchey, though. I mean, that way
he was
sort
the Kingslayer.
He trolled him a little bit, but
he did. Yeah. He did.
I didn't think half as bad. Not half as bad as horse piss.
Well, that's true.
Well, no, or cutting his freaking hand off.
Well, there's that.
Right? Let's not forget that.
Well, yeah, hang on, because when he decides, when he's in with the medic, when Jamie's in with the medic, and he starts, you know, it's the end of the scene, and he starts cutting off, and there's that cutaway to Baelish checking his watch or something. He's like holding up his wrist, and is like, "What's going on?" He's walking down some stairs. I thought that must have been intentional.
I thought that was more of a cut for going from Harrenhal to the person who was supposed to inherit, well, not really inherit, but receive Harrenhal. I thought that was kind of a, I don't know what you really call that.
Work both ways, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a transition.
And I did see Baelish wearing his Mockingbird pin. They didn't talk about that at all.
The Mockingjay.
Yeah, the Mockingjay. He is the Mockingjay.
Sorry.
Please insert the whistle.
Well, they talked about it in season two, so I guess.
You're right.
Somebody on Twitter, I'm trying to find it right now. But they called him Roose Trolton. I swear to the gods, I will give you credit for this. I read it, and now
look like a troll.
We're trying to record, so I don't want to like, hey guys, stop the show a second. Let me find this tweet. So you know who you are. I will find you later. It was damn funny. I'm gonna stop looking now.
Well done.
No, it was like when they walked up, I expected to see them mistreat the both of them like their captors had been doing.
Yeah.
But my guess was actually correct that whenever they got to the place they were going, they would set Brienne free. I thought that only made sense. Like, it was very clear that Brienne was transporting a prisoner. She was not bad, yada, yada, yada. So I was glad that no further transgressions would have happened. And it also makes me think, what would have happened? Like, how pissed off would Roose Bolton have been if the captors would have done what they had planned to do with Brienne? Spiffy GIF on Twitter. Sand Jeff Gaffney. That's who said it. Roose Trolton. Sorry.
Spiffy GIF.
Spiffy GIF.
Trolton?
From Ireland. Okay. Yeah.
Was the person who was treating Jamie, was that the maester that they saved, or not really saved, but that Rob gave water to a couple episodes ago?
Oh, good question.
I think it was, yeah.
Didn't they say they took his chain because Jamie's like, can I see some credentials?
Yeah, he's like, you're not a maester. See some ID.
Hey, just before I get somebody to cut away part of my hand, you know, can I see some chains or something? Some rare metals around your neck for the links forged like, for Mordor, please?
No, what happened was he gave him Polyjuice Potion, and that's why he revealed everything he did in the bathtub.
Yeah.
There's too many things colliding right now. I thought it was great when he was like, I think we're going to have to take it up. We're just going to need to cut this much of your arm off or whatever. And basically, he chokes the guy with the remaining hand. And he's like, there's no need to overcompensate, sir. Just take off what you need, please. And he's like, all right, I suppose that we can just clean it up a little bit. Like, what a dick move.
Jamie's the best.
But by who, though?
I mean,
a big move by the guy. He's like, we need to cut off more of your arm. And Jamie's like, I'm not that stupid.
No.
I realize that there's no need for you to take off my entire arm. I mean to club somebody with this in the future.
I like how he I like how he gets like the surgery done without any meds though.
I know. Yeah. Isn't that just a bit overkill though? Like, seriously, Jamie, just take the milk of the poppy.
He wouldn't even take
like,
the milk.
Like, what
of
have
the
you
body?
Got to prove?
Yeah.
You guys know? Ever had that shit? It makes you feel weird.
Yeah, but come on.
He just, I mean, I think he wanted to stay at full. He didn't want to lose his senses at all when he was with the enemy, you know?
Yeah. That's
I think
true.
It was, yeah, I think it was cathartic too. It's proving to himself that he can live this way. It's almost like, you know, previously he had to get his will to live back. Now I think he's got it, especially now he knows his sister's still alive. You know, he's back in the game. He needed to feel that pain. He's probably never felt more alive, sickly. But. You know, I think he needed that. That was a character moment. He definitely got points for me for that.
Mm.
I just thought he was a crazy bastard for that. I was like, cut it out, man.
Yeah, it's just, I think it's unclear what Milk of the Poppy does. Like, I don't know why he didn't get it. It's like, I would take the morphine. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically that.
It is, yeah. But he's just a boss that way, so.
And Brienne just had to stand up when she got mad and just... Hey,
I'm
naked under here.
He tricked her into doing that. Because he was like, I'm so angry. I will show you my nakedness. And
just
adding
there.
To the butt count.
Yeah. And then Jamie was like, you know, I forgot what I was mad about.
Yeah, you know,
I apologize.
I appreciate you, right? Yeah.
He's like, you know, you look different with all that armor on. Now without anything on,
yeah,
not too bad. You know,
we had such a great scene with them after that where, I mean, not only did we get the nakedness, but we also got the... the trust. I mean, there was, you know, he was saying, what was they saying? I'm sorry, it's late. But basically, he concluded with him saying, I trust you. And that was just brilliant. And he also asked her to call him Jamie. And it's just the beginning of a beautiful friendship, great. You
My
guys.
My name's Jamie.
Well, and that was so emotional because he'd been given that entire spiel about how these people, his entire life after this moment, because he was relatively young when all of this happened with the Mad King, that he had been called all these terrible things in the minds of all of these, quote, honorable people. And in reality, he was trying to pick the lesser of the two evils. Like, do I sacrifice my family and my father and the lives of tons of innocent people just because this guy's a raving lunatic? He's insane. So I just, this was really emotional for Jamie, I thought, as a character, to be like, just call me Jamie, damn it. No one does. Yeah. It's my name. Only Cersei calls me Jamie. And I think he may need to start, like, he should stick with the Brienne thing because now we, Cersei's going to be busy with someone else, you know? I didn't see that coming. I literally lulled when that happened.
Neither did Cersei.
She didn't see that coming. That was like a you know, a father disciplining his children, and she's there smirking the whole time because her little brother's getting yelled at. And then, of course, he's got some for her, too. Unbelievable. But I felt bad for her in a way. She's condemned to being in another loveless marriage.
But I can't feel too bad for her, though, because she was so smug about Tyrion.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel the same way. She was like, oh, Tyrion, you have to marry her. Ha, ha, ha. Even though you're in love with someone else and even though you're not a pedophile. Ha, ha, ha. Ha.
And did Tywin throw down in this episode?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Flipped it over.
And he also said, hey, little girl, I know what you've been up to with your brother.
Yes. Yep. He said, let's disprove all the nasty things people have been saying about you. And to Tyrion, he said, wed her, bed her, and put a child in her. And I was like, he knows. He's just, do it, man. It's like, unbelievable. He's like, you're late to be married anyway. It's like this was a favor for Tyrion. He's like, you wanted to be rewarded here. I'm the Stark girl. The key to the North, man. This is all politics. But like, the Sansa wedding was a pretty big subplot in this episode because Margaery's lying to her and telling her that basically after they get married, after she marries Joffrey, she'll slowly plant the seeds with Loras to arrange for that marriage. Loras already knows, though, because when Baelish sends his guy to sleep with him, Loras is like, yeah, I'm wedding Sansa. Baelish finds out, tells Cersei. Cersei knows, tells Tywin. And, like, nobody's it's unbelievable, the deception in this episode.
Yep.
Yeah, damn Oliver.
Well, it worked pretty well, anyway. It's really that complicated, I hope, as I described. But it read a lot easier on the screen, you know?
And girls will be happy to know that the show has some much-needed male nudity, as I've been hearing. As all of the girls keep on reflecting, as Sue was complaining about. There you go, everybody.
Yes. Male on male nudity.
There was two of them, at one time. So enjoy. No, but
hey, Loras, you guys had your girl on girl.
Did we? Now I forget. Oh, in front of Baelish. They did that against their will. They were being paid.
Yeah.
That was forever ago.
Also, it's a TV show. If anyone gets their kicks out of a show, consider yourselves need to rethink some things. Anyway, so this happened. Loras, it's TV, come on. The entire marriage situation with Loras and Sansa, I was confused about at first because I know it's not exactly the same in the book. And so I actually sort of forgot when I heard it last week, and then I had to relearn it again this week when it happened. And I think it's a lot more friendlier, easier for us to digest. Mm-hmm. And I didn't expect it to happen I guess you could call it the small council, which it really has deteriorated into only a few people, that Cersei is marrying him now. Yeah. And I didn't see that coming. What surprised me the most was the Tyrion Sansa bit. Like, I feel like so many things you can kind of sort of see coming or figure out if you calculate some of it in your head and say, well, this is kind of the only direction this could go. Mm-hmm. But Tyrion was out of left field for me. And I'm interested to see how this progresses further, because it seems like whatever Tywin says right now is law. So if something doesn't happen to Tywin to change up this shit, then I'm curious to see how Tyrion handles this.
Could they mutiny? Do you think that the Lannister kids would get together and mutiny against Tywin?
Well, are they united enough for that? That's the problem, because there's so many problems between them, you know, that they might not be able to. And how will Shay feel about this? That's what I want to know.
Well, yeah.
Well, didn't she right. say she's on Sansa's
side? Isn't exactly like she's on Sansa's side, but will she take Sansa's side in this, or will she be like, "Bitch, you're still in my man"? You know.
So now she's gonna be like, "Oh, you are." She's gonna have a total reason to be jealous. I understand why they set that up. Then mm-hmm. it seemed a little sloppy before, and I get it now. They're really trying to push it in.
Well, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I see. Maybe it was set up. I don't know.
I think it was. I definitely think it was. But I'm still curious whether it was set up as. You know, for her to be jealous of Sansa or for her to be on Sansa's side. I mean, I'm that'll be interesting to see.
I think no matter what, she's going to take it out on Tyrion.
Yeah.
So
I think
there's
right.
that to look forward to.
That's unfortunate. Like, Tyrion's got his finger on the pulse of it all. He says to his father, you know, after what Joffrey did to this girl, you want me to go after her? And he's like, yeah, and you'll be proud to do so. He knows exactly what pain, what fresh hell it will cause Sansa. And so that's a good
thing.
He
also said... you're not going to mistreat this girl. So it was a way for Tywin to be like, listen, she's been mistreated. I get it. Joffrey's an ass bag. Not to repeat the ass bag. Oh, not an ass hat. Look,
ass
hat. Bag.
There you go.
Right. He's an ass bag and you're not. Maybe you're small, but you're not an ass bag. So enjoy. Like, it's in your hands now.
But there was a stipulation. He's got to put a child in her. And Cersei, he says to Cersei, hey, you're still fertile. You got to have some kids. It's like they're all cemented with children and marriage, and this is how Tywin clings to power, essentially. He took this proposed wedding between Loras and Sansa and stuck one of his children to each of them. He separated. He cut it right down the middle like cake and said, you know, I have two kids with me. One of each of you will marry these two. And then, again, they're just in the middle of it all. You know,
like cake.
Yeah, like cake.
It's pretty delicious. Smart, though. I mean, making allegiances, we've all learned this from Game of Thrones Ascent. It's
yes.
It's very important who
you
marry
win
your
you
children
die.
Off to. Yes.
You win or your Facebook is deactivated.
Tywin's just come in, and he's on cleanup duty. You know, he's just coming through and tying up all the loose ends, doing everything in his power to make things right for his family. And I think the other interesting point that got brought up that he felt very strongly about was that Robb Stark is in a lot of trouble.
There was a good line he had in this episode, and I quoted, but he was talking too fast. I didn't get to do it. But he said, I'm not fighting for justice if I don't serve justice to my men. And then he said something like, no matter how highborn they are. He had a bit of a dilemma in this episode, which is that Carr Stark went and killed some kids, the Lannister kids. And
oh my god, yes.
So that's why they introduced him.
This guy, I'm telling you, this guy.
Which guy?
Carr Stark. Lord Snowy Beard.
Oh, Carr Stark.
Yeah, Snowy Beard.
Carr Snark.
We're related because you're a Stark and I'm a Carr Stark and we're related. I don't know.
Do we agree with Rob, though?
Suspiciously close.
I thought he saw reason. You know, he was like, I thought he was going to acquiesce and like just keep him hostage. And then the next scene was the execution.
Well, I didn't because Axiomoron retweeted something on Twitter that was pretty. It was like, I'm looking forward to a Carr Stark being a little shorter tonight or something like that. And I was like, well, I think he's going to get beheaded or someone's going to take his knees off. The mafia is going to visit him, break his legs. No, I thought the way Rob handled it was stupid. I thought it was a very Ned move, though, and he's his father's son. It was not at all how you should play the game. Hey, let's take out some of our biggest supporters, the Carr Starks in the North, who are part of our family. But, I mean, he was right in his decision. They snuck in, five of them, and killed some kids. And out of spite, not for any particular reason. They didn't sneak in and behead the Kingslayer. They snuck in and killed some kids. So, head of the Gridiron, hang some of the rest, done and done.
I mean, the other thing would be how many of Rob's men died, you know, that were guarding outside those kids.
I know that was a lot.
But he's furious.
Well.
He's like, bitch, I told you not to do that. He's like, this is exactly what I told you not to do, is to go after these kids. Like, and this Carr Stark guy he just had to have his revenge. And I understand there's no place for a person like that in your guard, but Rob really didn't realize the weight of his decisions until it was too late. And then later he pouts to his wife, oh, you all were right. Oh, half the men are gone.
You know what this reminded me of a little bit? It was a last season finale when Dany locked her handmaiden into the vault with Sarosa and Daxos Daxos, as we like to call him.
To prove a point, you go.
She betrayed him. Yeah. And I don't know, there was just something where these people who are trying to be leaders are in way over their heads, and they're trying to prove themselves by showing that they can be merciless, even though they really have a lot of love in them.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're kind of trying to fight that.
It's interesting to actually see sort of the deterioration of Rob, because...
it's not. It sucks.
Well, from somebody who's read the books, because you don't see through his perspective. He's not a point of view character, and we've discussed this before on the show. You see more of him through Catelyn. So to actually witness it, to me, is really cool, actually.
And I really liked the execution scene that they had it raining, and it was like an obvious parallel with Theon last season executing Sir Roderick. Only Rob was able to behead him in one stroke, but I think both scenes are kind of, you know, a big kind of, you know, moment for each character in kind of a point of no return situation.
Crossroads.
And did you see how pissed off he looked when he was walking away from the body?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I mean, that's definitely pointing us in a direction. So I'm interested to see what happens to Rob. I think what's been happening to him is terrible. I'm glad he's taking care of business, though. Good job, Robert.
I know we're still learning about magic in this series too, but can you just curse somebody by saying "kill me and be cursed"? Like, because those were Karstark's last words to him: "Kill me and be cursed. You're no king of mine." So, cursed, is that like an actual curse, or
does
is that
he
like
have
be
magic?
Is that like
Do you
saying
think
be
Karstark
damned?
Has magic though?
Is he a red
he
priest?
Looks like a wizard.
Yeah, well, you know what?
It's like Dumbledore.
That's a good point. You know, I guess it's in the air for him. We'll find out later, I'm sure.
I guess
like how that's a valid argument. He looks like a wizard. It's a TV show. They made him a certain way for a reason. I didn't see a pipe, though, so he's minus one on the wizard front.
No long bottom leaf on him.
No long bottom leaf. Zero long bottom leaf.
But I think, I didn't care for Karstark, obviously, but I also didn't care for Rob's wife, who comes up to him when he's pouting and is like, "Silly me, I don't know how to read a map. I don't even know where Winterfell is. La, 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 la." You know, he's like trying
to
plan a battle.
I think there's supposed to be a deeper meaning than that, though.
I don't know, man. He's like, I guess she kind of unlocks, like inspires him to see a way, but it's, I don't know. She just kind of ditzing around, and he had a lot of issues to work through.
But talking about the desperation from before, I mean, Roose Bolton now is at Harrenhal. He's split from Rob. The Karstarks have left Rob. So two of his right-hand men are no longer by his side. And he makes the decision now that he has to go back and ally himself with the man who he betrayed by marrying Talisa.
Mm-hmm.
So
bum, bum, bum.
This is not a great situation for him to be in.
He's doing his best, though, with what he has. And I think that, I mean, the thing about Rob is that he's never going to stop trying. And I really enjoy that about him because, I mean, here he is in the situation. He's backed against the wall and he's thinking, you know what? I'm going to have to go to these people because I need to keep moving forward.
Hmm. Yeah, but it's such a juxtaposition between where he was last season,
mm-hmm.
where he was winning and winning and winning and things were much better now.
Yeah, exactly.
Just shows you how, you know, in these books, war is, you know, it could be up one day, down the next, or, you know, I don't know how long the time frames are, but you get what I'm saying.
Well, you know what they say, Micah, it has to get worse before it gets better. So we'll just have to wait and see.
The night is darkest just before the dawn.
But exactly. Not in the case of this show, because the ratings are steadily climbing. The episodes are getting even better, I think. I thought last week was the best yet. I still think it probably eclipses this one for me personally, just because of the ending. I thought the ending was great.
Oh, yeah. So funny.
But this episode was wonderful because it was full of such great backstory that got to give us even more glimpses toward Ned and toward Robert, people that we both care about and love so dearly that we can't see them anymore. That makes me sad. And I believe it's time for Owens.
I'll go. And there really were so many, and I want to give at least four to Davos in this episode. But Arya, for still reciting her little mantra of who she wants to kill or see dead, Joffrey, Cersei, Ilyn Payne, Ser Meron, and the Hound. This
right
is,
in front of him.
This is, yeah. clearly she's on a mission. She still is able to keep things together, even in face of great odds. And the fact that she's basically being a hostage to these brothers without banners. So I'm going to give it to her. Give my own to Arya.
Well, I'm going to give my own to Jaime this week, because I think
for
that...
what in particular?
Oh, mm-hmm. Well...
just
not
that's it.
Just that. Oh my God. No, I'm going to stick to Jaime. I had another one, speaking of the nakedness, but someone else can take that one. But just because I think that in this episode, it was finally when he's beginning to win everybody over, not least Brienne, that he is not actually the bad person that she and the audience has always thought that he was. And I thought that that was brilliant. But now I'm kind of, now I've just said that I really want to give my own to John, because way to go, dude. Way to teach her. But yeah, no, I'm going to stick with Jamie.
I'm going to give my own to Rob, because he's one of my favorite characters, and he really, maybe he didn't do the best move politically, but he had a conviction. The guy betrayed him. He needs to die. He needs to get executed. And
right.
He did the deed himself. And just like his father, you know, you know, he showed the kind of guy he is.
Old Robbie.
I think I wrote down one, and then I thought that wasn't very good, so I kept going. I don't know what this quote's for, but I put, Lord of Light, give us a new episode, and here it is. I don't really know what sense that makes, but it's there. So here's the episode. I guess it worked. I thought it was great when Lady Olenna, a.k.a. the Queen of Thorns, was like, God's boy, that's enough. We're not in a tavern to pod.
Yes.
I thought that was absolutely
like,
hilarious.
Where did you go to get those, Valentus?
That was good. This isn't a tavern. I thought that was great. But I think my actual own, that was like second runner-up beauty pageant thing, like not quite as hot as the first one. Here is the first one. I thought my favorite part of the episode that owned was when Egret, or Egret, as John likes to shout,
Egret,
turned to John inside of this cave full of steamy romance. She said, you swore some vows. I want you to break them. So, yeah.
Nice.
He broke some vows. So, there you go, Egret. It was fun. Everybody got to have their moment. And wonderful.
Nice.
I want to change mine.
Oh.
just to be difficult. Because I just wanted to see if anyone else took it. No, give me one. Because I think, you know, as great as Jamie was, I got to give mine to Tywin, though. Because way to own Cersei and Tyrion. Like, that was, if you're talking about not favorite scenes but just owns in general, I mean, way to own everybody.
I think I'd have to give it to Beric Dondarrion when he says basically that he's been killed by two Cleganes and he's still standing.
Yeah, brilliant.
You think he would have learned his lesson?
I don't know, part of me still wants to give it to Arya, though, because there's this
don't
one
fight
line
it.
That she has. She says, I believe it's to both Beric and Thoros, could you bring back a man without a head? Not six times, once.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, Arya.
How would you communicate with him?
Bring the mood down, Micah.
Even
sorry.
If you did.
It's not really a moment. It was just a moment.
If you want to talk about owns, let's talk about how she put her babies in those jars. She owned those kids, huh? Huh? Hey, listen, owns can be whatever you guys want. We receive a wide variety of owns, whether it be through email. Some are sent through Twitter, which a lot of you guys have done live. I think live with us tonight since the episode started. It is Sunday night. We are all recording in the dead of night, braving the darkness of winter to bring you this episode. And it looks like a lot of you guys, at least an hour and a half, 2 hours worth of you guys, have been doing the same on Twitter.
And now it's Eric Skull reads the tweets in God I hope 90 seconds or less.
Megan says, first own of the episode goes to Beric's flaming sword.
Lightsaber.
Old school lightsaber.
Gonna be hard to beat last episode, says Michael Cerrone.
Read the
Danny's triumph in
tweet.
Astapor was the most badass 6 minutes of the whole series so far.
Boom.
Vicky says, I think Egret found something that Jon Snow knows. Question, how to do. Michael Cerrone again says, you know something, Jon Snow. Isabel mentions that this whole episode was, in fact, epic, don't we think? Yes, we think. Borden Wilson
believe
says,
so.
Ygritte Six Cave Sex owned John the episode and the entire fucking season. Elizabeth Ann says Shireen totally owned her father.
Season?
Kid does what she wants, plus she's freaking adorable. Joe Martin says,
yeah, the whole season was strong enough.
Tywin owning Cersei when he dropped the Loras bomb. Ayo. The Loras bomb. Marvin says the Starks and Tullys owned Lord Karstark's head. First the Blackfist punched him in it, and then Rob cut it off in the next scene. Mike Brooks says, owner of the episode goes to Beric Dondarrion for slapping death across the face 6 times.
Gotta say, that's probably, is technically speaking, the best own that you could have ever.
If you want to break down owns.
Yeah.
You're breaking it down, yeah. And
owning death itself.
Owning death itself.
What do we say to the god of death?
You are
fuck
old.
You.
TFO.
Yes.
Please bring me back, Lord of
Light. JD says, own goes to Beric Dondarrion for having such a high blood alcohol count that his blood catches on fire. Dylan Manwoody says, Rob, this is a quote here. He was only the watcher. Hang him last so he can watch the others die. Mm.
Yeah, that was pretty owned.
That's hard ass.
Pretty badass.
That was pretty
owned.
Yeah.
Brittany Black says, Arya owned me by completely melting my heart when she said to Gendry, I can be your family.
Me too. My God, you guys.
Maisie is owning
Sigh.
It.
The Unsullied get a shout out in Jasmine Alvarado's tweet. Alvarado's tweet. Alvarado? Jasmine Alvarado says,
Avocado.
Jasmine Avocado says, Grey Worm owned his name. A rare touching moment in the series.
A rare touching moment in the series?
Oh, Jasmine.
There were a few rare touching moments in this episode.
Yeah, not so rare, more with the touching.
Our friend Gordon has a question. Gordy Wall says, is this the first episode where John has actually said Ygritte's name? Passing observation.
See, I thought the same thing.
It probably is.
Because he said it so weirdly.
Ygritte. We would have noticed before, wouldn't we?
Ygritte. Yeah, I think
so. Are you going to our igloo?
Igloo. Jenny Lee Nolf says, Tywin owned Cersei by ordering her to wed her into her least favorite family in Westeros. Ryan Emerald concurs. He says, own goes to Tywin, putting both of his kids in their place. And also, great job by Nikolai.
Yeah.
Lots of hashtags as well, Ryan. Nice use of hashtags.
Ryan said, you will marry Loras, kissed by fire, and what a scene.
What a scene.
Let those hashtags live long and prosper. Mary D says, Tywin's mic drop moment, leaving 2 stunned children in his wake. Epic.
There you go.
Jake Thurman is responding to something that Selena said about so many crucial scenes. A bathtub scene is a hashtag crammed into one episode.
Mm-hmm.
Kian Gaffney, Spiffy Gif. This is our friend from before. Roose
Spiffy Gif.
Roose Trollton takes the own for this episode. Gordon, again, Gordy Walls. Why is Gendry owning my heart with this misery? Damn you to hell, Joe Dempsey. Why is everyone abandoning Arya?
I'll
Why?
Join that one.
Andrew M. Smith with a serious tweet to us, gentlemen. Selyse owns some fetus.
She
and
does
Shireen owned those prophetic songs. I agree.
I think that's the first use of own we've heard, as in general ownership. Congratulations, Andrew Smith. We thought we had seen it all.
We thought we had, but we had not. Jake Thurman says, in a bizarre twist, male nudity may have owned female nudity in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
Side note, the blue bard, ? Gordon says, Melisandre's spreading schizo like it's no one's business. OWTF is it with Stannis and his offspring? He's got demon sperm.
Demon sperm.
Congratulations, you've titled this episode.
God, I'm clapping for this one. Everyone's performing so well.
Peggy Ruiz says,
Performing
Tywin owns
like
everything.
Jon Snow in a cave.
Doesn't he?
Yes.
But my
what
own
did you
has
do
to go
with
to
your mouth?
Barric
well,
and
we
Thoris
read the owns.
Death. Yes.
That's what he did. He just started reading the owns from Game of Owns and it worked.
Giselle G says, Jaime wins hands down and runner up to Jon for knowing just the right thing at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
ACP says, as much as I hate him, Tywin
well,
owned his kids
with Roz, so.
And wiped the smug smile from Cersei's face. Vanessa concurs. She says, Tywin owned everybody. SMH, terrible.
Shaking my head. That's what the kids say nowadays. SMH.
Oh, that's what that means.
Yeah, you didn't know that? It's
no.
It's mostly an urban term, but it's making its way across the countryside.
Oh. And Isabel says, can't decide between Roose Bolton owning Jaime with the story of King's Landing or Tywin Lannister owning his kids. And last but not least for so far, Roshni Bambwani says Shireen owns Stannis by ignoring his designation of Davos as a traitor. Love Shireen and Davos in a non-shipping way because ew.
Well, we've seen stranger things happen.
On Stranger Tides.
And that was Eric Skull reads the tweets in 4 minutes, I think, unless whatever it's ever down to. We finished the tweets, everybody.
It definitely wasn't 90
Yay.
Seconds.
Yay.
We had a lot of owns,
and we did it without
Sam.
The Raven visiting.
You tried doing it with that many owns, I'm telling
you. We did. Uh-oh, Eric and Sam are getting into it.
You tried doing it with one own, Sam. You tried doing it with one own. Bet you never did it with any owns.
I will.
You're not the father, Sam.
I'd rather not do it with any than do it with Theon.
Oh, Theon.
Well, join these people.
I bet you
Tweet
liked
it.
Him tied up in that preview.
I didn't see the preview. I'm
it's
on
Game
HBO Go, motherfucker.
If you prefer these
What's
two to continue arguing, let us know on Twitter at Game of Owns or on Facebook /Game of Owns. I think you know the first part of that URL.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. And if you do want to email us, you can do so at contact@gameofowns. And that's for your longer format emails. And we do tend to read those on our mailbag episodes, which are up and coming.
Also, just read them and speculate between the four of us.
Indeed.
Don't forget to visit winnerscoming.net. That's probably where you are listening to this episode. I'm looking forward to the Twitter breakdown. And we also had to record a little bit later tonight because Phil was still working on his breakdown. I could hear the keys getting snapped through, but if you want to read that, I'm sure it can be linked up somewhere in the show notes. There's a recap all over the internet. It's Game of Thrones season. Everyone's excited. Tra-la-la. Visit it.
We've also got hypeable.com, which is hypeable.com, where you can find lots of other stuff that isn't just Game of Thrones. We've got a variety of podcasts over there. Some that I'm on, some that I'm not on. It's like,
and they
it's
suck
like bingo
when she's
with
on
Selena.
Them.
Exactly. I agree,
I
but not
I like
officially.
Everyone there.
Of course, they're all amazing. And so go check those out and make up your own opinions. How about that?
Mm-hmm. Don't let us fill your head with nonsense. Just try it on your own. You might like it.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you can head on over to iTunes to download more of these episodes. And while you're there, we appreciate you giving us a nice little rate and review. Nothing less than 5 stars is acceptable. Or perhaps you may find yourself locked up in a cell tower with Selyse Baratheon and Lysa Arryn.
Oh,
what happens
my
to you
goodness.
After that is purely up to the imagination. But who even wants to think about something as terrible as that? I mean,
they're
going
to
make you father
jars.
their children.
Yeah, exactly. There's a pretty good, you mentioned it before, and I don't want to get into it. Maybe we'll save it for another episode. But there's some correlated fucked upness between the two of them and their children.
If there really are, is, yes, you're right. Maybe Robert Arryn and Selyse or Shireen are the endgame couple, guys.
Yes.
We've just been reading that wrong.
I like to see them both collectively on the Iron Throne, nursing their own children.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Shireen is pretty badass,
though. The
ones
that aren't in jars.
In a bizarre twist of fate, even Robert Arryn will be nursing his children.
Oh, shit.
In a jar. Well,
just before we go, I noticed we got a new location on the map at the beginning of the episode. And I don't want to mispronounce anything, so I'm going to leave it up to Phil. Is it Yunkai?
Yeah, I think
Yunkai?
So. Yunkai? I think that's how you pronounce it. That sounds good.
Kind of sounds like ass high.
Yunkai and ass high. An ass to pour.
Damn,
so many asses in the show.
I can tell you.
This episode was not ass to pour. It was ass to rich.
It was indeed.
Ass to rich. That should be the title of this episode.
And also wanted to share with you a couple of those iTunes reviews that we received the last week or so. First one here from Lancer316 says, "Great podcast, people. Keep up the excellent work." Mm. 5-star review, of course. Also
Thank
another
you.
5-star review from UIC Nessa. Just says, "Love it."
Short.
Short to the point.
Like
and
it.
Final one
you
here.
You forgot the subject. It's rad.
It is rad. And final one here from Lit Hill Woman or Lithel Woman, depending on how you read that. Subject, awesome, says, "The best GOT podcast ever. I've listened to many GOT podcasts out there. When I listen to Goo, it's like sitting down with a group of friends."
You know what? We are friends, Little
we
Woman.
We are. Goo friends.
If that's your real name. We're great friends. Oh, you forgot the one down low, man, where it says, love the podcast, adore Micah and his threats from Bruja Peruli.
Oh.
He just didn't want to read that because he's bashful. Adore Micah. Oh.
I'm modest.
Micah's super modest. Also, someone said that we were the Arbor Gold of podcasts on there somewhere.
Whoa.
And we may have read that one before, but I thought Arbor Gold should get a shout out. It's Game of Owns. It's Monday.
I guess that's better than being the Arbor Mist of Monday. Podcasts.
It is officially Monday now.
Well, it's been Monday for ages for me, okay, guys? You come there with your Monday-ness.
See, it's officially Monday.
Is
it's the
sun
Monday episode.
Rising?
Yeah, I see your Monday night and I raise you. The sun has now risen and it's completely light outside.
Wow. You will be listening to this hours away from us making this. Try your brains on that one real quick.
Okay, we'll chomp on that.
I'm Eric Skull.
I'm Selena Wilkin.
I'm Micah Tannenbaum.
I'm Phil Bicking.
I'm Zach Louie. That was Phil.
I ruined everything.
No, you did it right. What do we do now?
My name is Jamie. My name is Jamie.
How dare you?
Call me Jamie.
And cut.